This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and as always, I'm joined by Bradley Chambers. Tonight, we're sponsored by Jam Software, the makers of Casper Suite, which is a mobile device management system for Macs and iOS devices that really helps you to get your deployment done in reasonable time. I say reasonable because that's actually the topic of tonight's show, is what kind of week it's been for me personally at school. We opened up this week and we deployed a whole bunch of iPads. So we'll talk about that today, Bradley. How are you?
Fantastic. We are just cranking along school-wide. We are celebrating our school's 60th anniversary tomorrow. So we're like getting all the kids up on the soccer field, oddly enough, on the soccer field. And we're going to have all the kids wear the same color shirt, and we're making a 60 out of the kids. And then we have like a big lift.
Oh, very cool.
Take a picture, and it's a whole big thing we're celebrating all year long. So our school is almost old enough to get out Social Security. So
hopefully not in such bad shape that it needs it.
True.
Well, I'm in bad shape this week.
It sounds that way. You can always tell like by your tweets how your week has gone.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week. It has actually gone really well. But I have, a lot of the staff have kind of, they've been walking up to going, are you coping okay? because obviously the school opened on Monday, we're recording on Thursday, and we did our deployment at the beginning of the week. And it was, let's just say I've learned a lot this week. it fundamentally went fine. Right, we were deploying 110. Actually, we're deploying 100. We've got 110 on site. We deployed 100 iPads on Monday of this week, and basically by about Thursday, I think almost all of the major issues are ironed out. There's a couple that we'll talk about, but I certainly learned about a few things that cropped up, and we can probably just get into those, Bradley, if you like.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah. So to give you an idea of the way it worked, we have a primary and a secondary department at school. And for the primary kids, they were getting their iPads deployed through a personal model. I'm not even getting the words right anymore. They were being deployed in an institutional model. So I was using Apple Configurator. I had all their iPads ready to go. I had them set up with, activated. They were installed with all the apps. They had configuration profiles on them. They were enrolled in the mobile device management server, and they were basically ready to go. And all the kids had to do was put in their Wi-Fi password, set up their email, and set up a passcode. And I actually defined passwords for them, and I gave each teacher a sheet of paper with the child's email address and their passcode for their email, and also that should be used as a passcode for their iPad. That worked pretty well. And that's the way we've done it for years now, and that's pretty much well understood. We had a couple of issues with Apple Configurator, where there was one app in particular where we bought the coupon codes, and then we installed the app into Configurator, and Configurator said, this spreadsheet is not a spreadsheet for that app. And then it named the app that it should be for, and it named the app that was in Configurator, and they were actually the same app. So it was something to do. I got on the phone with Apple's enterprise support, and it turned out it was something to do with the text encoding in the name of the app or something really bizarre like that. So they had to go away and talk to the developer of the app and ask them to fix it. And then I haven't actually resolved that one yet, but it wasn't a terribly important app. So we'll follow up on that one next week. So that was my one major hiccup with Apple Configurator. Apart from that, that part of it went pretty straightforward, really smooth and ready to go. We had one issue with a couple of pupils basically getting their passcode wrong on a reliable basis. So what happened was that the teacher gave them their sheet of paper. They said, right, your iPad is going to show a please enter a passcode dialogue for that. And then they typed in the wrong thing twice and forgot what they typed in, as kids are wont to do. I mean, that's no particular criticism of them. But that was one situation where having them all pre-enrolled in the MDM really helped, because what I was able to do was just go into the Casper console and just push a passcode reset message to those devices. And that took the passcode off, and then they could set up a new one later on. So that was how that one went. That's kind of the same deployment that you've done, Bradley, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And yeah. And I guess you are on Casper version 9, correct?
Yes, we did that. And I don't know did we talk about that last week?
But you know, maybe.
I think we mentioned that Casper 9 had just come out not long before we were about to open for school. And I actually did upgrade to Casper 9, and the upgrade was fine. There was no problems with the upgrade. What I realized as we went through the deployment was that my understanding of the new interface in Casper 9 was not as strong as my understanding of the previous one. So it took me a little while to find where some things were when I was sort of working under pressure, that I would have known where to find them in Casper 8 a lot better. But I'm getting there with that. It's been a steep learning curve. Is good because you learn a lot in a short period of time, right?
Well, and you know you're not behind. I mean, even if it did cause a few challenges on day one, you know that you're basically up to date on terms of support. And because you know if you have an issue like with Casper 8, they're going to say, look, we've resolved that in Casper 9, and then you're going to have to upgrade anyways.
Yeah, and doing that after school starts makes me a wee bit nervous. Even though, you know, you're going to have to do it at some point, right? There's no way that you can run with a 0.0 up version of software all school year, but we'll find a window for that when it comes. So having said all that about the institutional model iPads, that was one thing. I ran into one other showstopper today with those iPads, which was a teacher asked me if they could buy an ebook and put it on those iPads. And it turns out there's actually no way to do that at all with an institutional deployment, because the rules say that you've got to redeem each code in an individual person's account. And you can install apps in Casper, sorry, not Casper, Apple Configurator. You can't install books in the same way and distribute them to devices. So I had to just unfortunately give a hard no on that one. So again, that's one of the themes of this show, I think, is complaining about ebooks. So we'll leave that for where it stands. As for the secondary iPads, for the older kids who are making Apple IDs, that was more difficult, and it was more of a learning curve for both me and them, I think. And primarily, one of the biggest issues that we ran into was just that there are just so many steps to set up an iPad. And, I mean, I suppose in some ways it's good that Apple's sort of meticulous in doing full disclosure on all the things that, you know, you're being asked to turn on and consent to and things like that. But my goodness, by the time you've done it 14 times, it starts to kind of get a bit wearing on you. So you've got to go through things like, you know, there's four, after you've basically set up everything, there's four different panels you've got to go through to say, yes, I want iCloud turned on. Yes, I want iCloud backup turned on. Yes, I want Find My iPad turned on. Yes, I want to use Siri because it's got to be disclosed that Siri sends what you say to the internet. And then you've got to disclose that you want diagnostic information sent to Apple, yes or no. And then you finally get to use your iPad. So that certainly took long enough. But the biggest issue, I think, was that we wanted kids to create Apple IDs. And one of the things that, when you step through the on-device process of making an Apple ID, one of the biggest things was that it requires the kids to type in their email address, right? So it says, do you want to get an iCloud email address or do you want to use your existing one? So we had the kids use their existing school email addresses, but quite a few of them just typed their email address in wrong, because our domain is cedars.inverclyde.sch.uk plus their, whatever their username is at the start. And more than once, I think probably, you know, 6 or 7 different times, kids were sitting there with a activated iPad, and I'm saying, well, set up your email now and then wait for Apple to send you the verify email so that it verifies your email address. And then some of them were like, oh, I don't have the email, And eventually you've got to work out that it's because they typed their email address in wrong, and you had to go through the whole setup process again, because there's no way to correct that. You just have to delete the account that's set up in the iCloud panel and then create another one from scratch. So once I figured out that was what you did, then that was fine, but that was a bit of an issue.
We have that same issue when we let our fifth graders log into their Google Apps accounts for the first time. You know, it's our domain is at brainerdbaptist.org. And you know, kids who have gone to school here for 8 years, starting in our three-year-old kindergarten, and they still can't spell Brainerd Baptist correctly. And you're just thinking, come on. You know, of course, most of the time when I'm talking to vendors on the phone, they still can't spell correctly either. So maybe it's just a hard name to spell. But yeah, that is not uncommon.
And it's not really Apple's fault that happens, because how do they know until they verify it whether it was right or not? And I suppose the verification step proves that it wasn't right. So it's doing its job in that sense. So basically what I'm saying is it took longer than I thought to create Apple IDs with students. And actually fewer than I thought came along with their own Apple ID. I thought more would. There was one or two classes where the majority already had an Apple ID, and those classes went great because it was just sign in and get on with it sort of thing. But most of the classes I had to make with the majority of the kids' Apple IDs. So it would be nice to have a way that a school could bulk make those, but I don't see that coming anytime soon. So it's still going to be an individual process. But apart from that, once we got that done, that was that. And one thing that I don't know if we talked about before, Bradley, is that before this all happened, I went through a process with my Apple SE of getting our IP address whitelisted with the App Store. I don't know if we talked about that before.
We may have talked about it offline before, but I know that's definitely an issue.
Yeah, basically what can happen is that if Apple sees a large number of requests to make new Apple IDs coming from one IP address, that will trip some tripwires in the fraud system in the App Store. So you'll eventually get shut down with that. And there is a way that through your Apple SE, you can request that your IP address be whitelisted for a certain period of time, not forever, but for, I think it's 30 days from whenever they say it's set up. So we were whitelisted from about a week before opening day and a couple of weeks after. And that meant that we did not have any problems with the volume of traffic that we sent to the iTunes store during that period, both for making Apple IDs and for buying and installing apps and redeeming codes. And that's a very, very good idea if you are going to roll out a large deployment in one go, is that if you get blocked, it's going to be a long process to get it unblocked, and that could really disrupt the deployment. So that's a good thing to do in advance, and that worked fine. We had no problems with that. Our internet held up really well as well, which I was particularly nervous about given its history, but it held up like a champ. And having looked at the network stats for the past couple of days, what I've seen is that basically traffic to the iTunes store just destroyed every other bit of traffic on our network. So gigs and gigs and gigs of stuff came down from the App Store over the past couple of days, which is great, and it's great that it held up well, but it will be really nice when Apple release iOS 7 and their caching server so that all that stuff gets cached once and kids can just download it from an on-site server after that. I'm really looking forward to that feature.
That's in Maverick server, correct?
That's in Maverick server, yep. That is public information.
Yes.
I'm not to break the NDA, but let me just break the NDA and tell you, which is what most podcasters seem to be doing these days. Yeah, that's public information that's part of iOS or Maverick server. There's caching server at the moment in Mountain Lion server, but it doesn't work for iOS. It works for Macs, basically. So that's all coming to iOS, and that will be a real big help. I imagine the schools that may be more bandwidth constrained than we are might find that pretty tedious. But the beauty of having a take-home system is that once the kids take them home, they can install a whole bunch of apps, and they can still access the MDM server, they can get their apps, and they can actually do that on their home broadband as well, and it's fine.
Yeah, stay off my network.
Yeah, take that away. I did run into a number of issues with this deployment, and most of them were basically that I did not anticipate the amount of effort required. And I guess I should have, because at the end of the day, if you're deploying 100 iPads, and if in previous years when everybody was getting an institutional deployment, it took me 2 weeks to do it, and this time it took me 1 week to do it, 1 week of effort must have disappeared somewhere, because it's still all got to be done, doesn't it? So what I learned was that actually the profile of effort that's required to do this kind of deployment is actually much lighter before you do for the opening day, but much heavier afterwards. And as most people know, I actually teach classes as well as be doing the IT at Cedars. And I was scheduled to be off my timetable for one day to get the rollout done. It would have been a lot easier on me if I had been off timetable for 2 days, because by the time the second day came around, all the other teachers are away off, doing their classes and stuff, and I'm still running about trying to put out fires for everybody else, as well as teaching my own classes. So if I had maybe started my classes 2 days into the term instead of one, then that would have been a little easier on everybody. But, you know, that's good learning. That's something I sort of didn't anticipate as well as I could have. And I'm sure we'll do it differently next time. So the biggest issue and the biggest bit of learning for me was all around using MDMs or our MDM server, which, as you know, is a Casper suite, who are kindly sponsoring the show. And I'm about to tell you about some problems I had with their product, and then we'll tell you how great they are, and then we'll finish off by telling you that they're actually pretty solid. But mainly the issues that I ran into were sort of my own making, but I don't know how I would have known not to make these mistakes without the experience that I gained this week. Does that make sense?
I think that makes sense. It's the job, I guess, of a product manager for a company like a Jamf, or any other company that makes any product that's, you know, works with deployments, to anticipate those problems. And if you often say that, like, you know, if I run into a bug, it's a failure of QA. You know, it's not that I expect something to be bug-free. Like, if I find a bug in my firewall and they say, okay, yeah, that's a bug, we'll fix that. It's not that, you know, you expect there to be bugs, but it's the job of the QA department to find those bugs before I do. And so it's the job of maybe somebody at Casper or, you know, Jamf to anticipate where, you know, deployment people, where you might get tripped up, even if it's not necessarily something's wrong, but okay, let's put it in the hands, put it in our mindset of, like, what are they going to do right here? Okay, let's anticipate that and let's make it foolproof.
Yeah, I don't know if some of the things that I ran into were to do with being on a fairly fresh new major version with Casper 9, but I mean, let's get down to brass tacks. I mean, what did I see? The biggest problem I saw was really in the first couple of days, when every pupil in the school was hammering the self-service portal in Casper for apps, that it started to slow down pretty badly. But for background, and you got to keep this in mind as you're thinking, hearing what I'm saying here, I deployed this on an Amazon EC2 cloud machine, right? And starting off, I decided that I basically put it on the cheapest possible, smallest size of cloud machine, which is what Amazon calls a T1 micro instance, which is very, very cheap. It's 2 cents an hour or something. But obviously, it's the least powerful of all the options that you can have on EC2. And I didn't have time in the first day to even think about looking at this, you know, because I had so many classes to kind of get through and deploy. But when I looked at it the second day, I thought, maybe what if the server itself is under too much load for this? So I went onto the Amazon AWS console and had a look at the CPU profile for my T1 micro server, and it was through the roof. It was there were, you know, 15-minute periods of 100% CPU usage, just off the charts. You know, and obviously because it's a cloud machine, I couldn't tell you the exact physical specification of the machine, but it clearly wasn't big enough to handle the load that was being put under. So that was the end of Tuesday that I realized that could be the problem and thought about it. And on Tuesday about noon, Tuesday evening actually, I changed the instance type and I put it up to be a small instance, which is just one step up from micro. And we've run with that for the next couple of days. And Wednesday and Thursday, we ran with the small instance, and it's been fine. So hard to say a little bit, because I think a lot of kids are no longer hitting the self-service portal. They've got the key apps that they need and want, And the demand is lower now, but also the machine's a little more powerful. So in fact, probably what will happen is that, you know, give it a couple of weeks, I could probably roll back to a micro instance for the steady state running of the system. But for that opening day, I should have had it on a much, much larger instance that was capable of handling much more traffic. And that's something I've learned. And I don't know if there's maybe optimizations that need to go into Casper 9, I'm not sure. But I think also, you know, I could have solved that with a little more pessimism on my part. I could have probably avoided most of that problem.
What's the money difference between a micro and a small?
Now you're asking. I think from memory, a micro is 2 cents an hour, and a small might be 8 cents an hour. So it's a fair jump in terms of the, you know, percentage increase, but it's not going to break the bank running on a slightly bigger one. I think the next one up, which is the medium size, is over 10 cents an hour. Ours is deployed in the EU West zone, which is actually in Ireland. So it's a little more expensive than doing it in the US, but we do it there because it's nearer to us. So taking another step up would start to be significant costs, but I think over the long term, we can probably actually run back down to a micro once the kids have got most of the apps, because new apps come along every so often, but, you know, it's that opening day that's really, really tough. And I guess that's the beauty of the cloud, is that I could have, you know, had a very, very beefy server for 2 days and then had a very cheap server for the rest of the year until I need it again. So it was dead easy to do that, and it was easy to, you know, just stop the VM, change the instance type to a bigger one, start it up again, and you're back up and running. It's really cool.
That's amazing that you can just, like, without affecting anyone, just move it up and move it down.
Yep, nobody knew. I mean, I changed it again. When I first noticed this problem, I put it up from small to from micro to medium, and then realized that was too much. And then the next day at lunchtime, I took it down to a small size, and nobody knew, nobody even found out. So that was a huge, huge win for setting this up on AWS over setting up on a machine here. Because previously my plan had been to put it on a Mac Mini in the school. And I think if I had done that, I would have been in a much bigger jam in terms of that load, because there'd probably be nothing. There would be nothing I could do about increasing the power of that machine without migrating onto another piece of hardware that I don't have. And it would have been kind of embarrassing to go and say, oh, by the way, it's day one of term and I need a much bigger computer. Can I get it tomorrow from the Apple Store? So, huge win. A big fan of Amazon Web Services. And that's that got me out of a tight spot. Do we want to do the... let's advertise Casper now.
Yeah, it's kind of... Yeah. This whole show's basically about them.
This is super awkward.
Yeah, we appreciate Jamp Software for sponsoring Out of School for the past few weeks, and they'll be here for a few weeks more. They provide ICT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies in education organizations. Now with Casper Focus, they have placed these powerful technologies directly in the hands of teachers that work with students every day. Casper Focus enables teachers to unlock the full potential of the iPad in the classroom by ensuring all students are engaged on the same activity and using their iOS devices in the way that technology was intended. Learn more at jampfsoftware.com. That's jamfsoftware.com. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes, but we appreciate them sponsoring the show. So back to more about Casper Software.
Yep. Oh, dear. So that was my first kind of learning about deploying Casper at scale and under heavy load. And the resolution of that was fine. What I later found out was another issue was that in the self-service portal, now what the self-service portal is in Casper is basically a web clip that gets installed when you enroll a device. And the web clip takes you to a... you know how when you have a web clip on iOS, you can set it so that it brings up Safari, but there's no Safari Chrome around it, so it just looks like a kind of web app.
Yeah.
It does that, basically. So we were talking about it as, like, go into the self-service app. And the kids were doing that, and they accepted it as an app, no problem. But when you hit install on the self-service app, what it does is it sends a signal, a web request to the Casper server to then send a push back to the device, right? So it's basically user-initiated push of codes, because ultimately the code has to come from the server to the device. But with Casper, and this is one of the reasons I went with Casper over Meraki, was that on Meraki, only the admin can push to the device, whereas on Casper, the user can actually initiate the push themselves through self-service, which is an incredibly elegant solution to the problem, and I really, really like it. But there were two issues, and one was related to the fact that the server was under heavy, heavy load, which was that it wasn't responding to the kids as quickly as they thought it should. Because what happens is you tap the install button, and then essentially nothing visual happens until the request goes to the server and the push is sent back to the device. So in our scenario where the server slowed to respond, the kids were saying, oh, that didn't work, tapping the button again and tapping it again and tapping it again. And what eventually happened was that Casper started to sort of mark multiple codes as being used by the same device. So if a child in one iPad is sitting there tapping that button five times, Casper, every time a request comes in before Casper sends one out, it basically marks that code as being used by that device. So now, before I got it resolved, what I had was a situation where there were some apps in the volume purchase list where a lot of codes had been used up, but they hadn't actually been redeemed in the store. Does that make sense? They're marked as used by Casper, but they haven't actually been used. Right. So now, or not now, but later on, what happened was we got into a situation where Casper thought all of the codes were used up and no more were available. And in fact, a lot of them had been falsely marked as being used. Right. There's actually quite a simple solution to this, which is to re-download the VPP spreadsheet from the portal that Apple provides and re-upload the spreadsheet to Casper, and it will resolve which codes are marked as used in the spreadsheet and which ones are not.
Because so it knows that, like, this is a false positive.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
That's neat.
Yeah, it worked really well, actually. It was a simple fix.
How did you discover that?
I sent an email to Casper support, or Jamf support. I should stop confusing the product and the company. But I think it's actually documented as well, but I was sort of at panic stations and I needed somebody to fix it for me. So I emailed them. So what happened then was that, you know, basically some of them got freed up again and then more kids could install them. So that was fine. And I think that was largely a factor of A, the server being under great load, B, the kids thinking that self-service was an app and should respond as fast as an app. And C, in some cases, the server would push a code to the device. The device would be taken to the app store to redeem the code, but then that step would fail somehow. And I think probably just because of network load as well on our part. So what we ended up with was that Casper thought that some codes had been redeemed when they actually hadn't been redeemed, and the re-upload was basically the way to solve that. Because what I didn't understand is that if you redeem a bunch of coupon codes and then you go back and download your VPP spreadsheet again, the content of that spreadsheet is different the next time you download it, because some of those codes are marked as already being used, which is quite interesting. And that's how Casper knows which ones were false positives. It can actually resolve that by looking at the new contents of the spreadsheet again. Hopefully that can be made slicker in the future. Yeah, but that was how it worked. And I think it actually needs to sort of be slicker from Apple's point of view as well. I mean, that was one of the things that was pointed out to me, was that if there was an API for an MDM server to talk to the App Store and see check the status of codes, there's no such mechanism to do that except by the user downloading the VPP spreadsheet again and uploading it to the MDM. But in principle, that could certainly be made to be a bit smoother as well. So that was the main problems that we ran into, and many of them were just matters of load and matters of expectation, I suppose, and timing and various things like that. So we've learned, we've definitely learned a lot today and yesterday. And I think that the next time I do this, it'll never be as hard again, right? Because in never again will I have to in one day enroll the entire school in the App Store, or at least even half the school, the entire secondary department in the App Store. That was a big load to do in one day, transitioning half of our deployment to a new model. But we did it, and I'm really pleased that we did it. And the benefits are already there. I mean, some of the things that have come out of this are the way that iTunes U works, for example. The way it really wants to work is when a teacher makes a course, they have an enrollment code, and then they give that out to the students, and the enrollment in the course is actually handled through through the Apple ID. So the student signs into iTunes U with their Apple ID, then they enter the course code, and then the teacher can then see in their course manager who has subscribed to the course, so they can see the Apple ID of the person that subscribed and so on. So that worked. That's starting to work pretty well now as well. It also means kids can get their own applications. It means kids can get free ebooks from the store and so on and so on. So for the most part, it's worked pretty well.
You know, you wonder, could you have been better served logistically by maybe doing like two grades at a time and trying to, you, that would help some of that load off the CPU, or do you think it's just better just to get it done and be done with it?
Well, we actually did do it that way. And sorry if I wasn't clear about that, but what we did was we, I had my normal timetable that day, and I saw most of the year groups at some point during that day. So during my class, we did the rollout with them. But the problem was that once I'd given out the first set of iPads, they're off to the next place. And then I give out another set, and they're away to their next class. And by the time lunchtime comes around, there's four classes have got their iPads, and they're hammering away on Casper and hammering away on the network to get all the apps that they want. Now, I think what would have been a better approach would have been to do the enrollment and only make two or three apps available in Casper, right? So there's an absolute essential core that they need for day one, which is basically iTunes U and Pages and Keynote. And if I had just put those three apps in self-service for that day, and then over the course of the week rolled out more and more apps into self-service, that would have probably lightened the load a little bit. And that's possibly another approach that could be good, is actually to be even lazier about it than I was. Because what I did was before school started, I bought all the VPP codes, put them all in Casper, scoped all the apps correctly so they appeared in self-service for the right classes, and so on and so on. And what that meant was that the kids basically had a candy store to go and rampage in once they had their iPad. But if I had, you know, trickled those out over the course of a couple of weeks, that could possibly have smoothed things out a little bit. And it certainly would have given me a chance to, if any issues cropped up, to catch them with one app or two apps in the field rather than 30 or 40 or whatever it is. So that's possibly another way that one could do it. Man, it's been a long week.
Yeah, you sound tired. Yeah. And it's always tough. I mean, if anybody who's listening doesn't work in education, it's like, it's a plane. It's like if you can just get it taken off and you're in the air, everything's usually smooth sailing. It's just that craziness of the you know, first couple of days, and the, you know, days leading up to school starting and the days afterwards. It's especially with any sort of new technology. We had a really smooth start to our year, really all around perspective, technology wise, just operational stuff. But it's because we didn't change anything from last year. And every year I've been here since I've been here, we've always changed something. It was either new technology, new processes, new something. And it just kind of creates chaos.
Yeah, it does. It does. The other thing that we did this year was that we changed our Wi-Fi configuration a little bit, so that we went from having a shared Wi-Fi key for everybody, which is just one password that if you knew it, you got on the network, to having Aerohive's private pre-shared key for each individual student. So the password that I gave them out at the start of the year worked for their Google Apps account, and it worked for their network as well. But what we did is we limited it so that the kids could only, that password would only work for one device. So, and this is an example of the kind of things you don't think about, right? We have a dozen MacBooks from our previous sort of Mac deployment. And we still use those for a couple of online services that depend on things like Flash and Java and even Shockwave. And some kids use those laptops. So I hadn't actually touched them from last year. The way we configure them is we put, they're running, I think their maximum OS is Lion from memory. So they're not even running Mountain Lion, but they're running Lion. But what they're doing is there's only an administrator account on them, which only I know the password to, and then there's a guest account. Because they're only really used to access the web through a desktop web browser. So some kids got those today, and this was about 2:30 in the afternoon, just before I had a class. And the teacher who taught that class came through and she said, which network password should the kids put in for those computers? And I was like, oh, I can't believe it. I forgot to even think about the laptops. So what had happened was that some kids had put their Wi-Fi password in into the MacBooks and got on the network that way, but now their iPad wasn't working on the network because their key was limited to one device. So that was a fun afternoon after school, just extracting those kids' passwords from those MacBooks, taking them off, making sure they weren't going to be reused by the next person who used the laptop, and then generating new passwords just for those computers as well. So, which obviously didn't take long, but again, it's just one of these things. There's so many things to think about. You know, I remember to do that for the Apple TVs, but I forgot to do it for the laptops. So, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and if that's like the worst thing that happens, I mean, and that's solved really quickly. But again, as you said, those little things do start to add up when it's like, you know, gotta put a new battery in this, got to reboot that, got to change the Wi-Fi password and that. That ends up being like a whole day's worth of just little things.
It does. And that was kind of why I said if I had been off timetable for a second day, even though I did get all the iPads rolled out on the first day, if I had been off timetable for a second day just to fight all the fires, then by Wednesday, I think everything would have been up in smooth sailing. I mean, I think what happened in reality was today being Thursday, I feel like today we're into a steady state of running. Now, there's still things that have to be cleaned up, but overall, I think we're pretty much there. There's a couple of things left to do with email distribution and things like that, which has become a little bit confusing because for some reason, we have class email aliases, and for some reason, every teacher is getting email sent to every class. So I need to investigate that as well. It's something to do with, we enabled Google Groups for Business as well, and I think it's something to do with the way that the membership works with staff and those lists as well. I think instead of making all the staff members, I have to go through and make, you know, just the staff member who teaches that class be a member or something like that. But we'll dig into that and see what the issue is there.
Well, you survived. And did you get a t-shirt like, I survived the iPad deployment of 2013?
I'm thinking about having a few made just for me.
How did your teachers handle all of this? What questions did they have, or how did it go with them?
Pretty good, actually. A couple of questions to do with things like, there's a couple of iTunes U issues, such as two teachers that share a class wanted to use the new feature where two teachers can share a class in iTunes U as well. And I hadn't actually looked at that yet, so that was something I sort of had to put on my to-do list to find out for them. But in general, they're super helpful. Quite a few of them actually brought their class to me and stayed and helped with, you know, the kids who are maybe having problems with, you know, typing in their email address, for example. And one of the things I did by the third time through this, I said, look, everybody type in their email address. Nobody press next until a teacher has checked that you have not done that wrong. and that was a good, useful break on people's enthusiasm. But yeah, that was mostly it. And the other thing we do is because all of our kids in secondary take their iPads home, I have to give it a lot of paperwork, you know, acceptable use policy, iPad owner's guide, and also a form for the pupil and one of their parents to sign as well to show that they've all read it and agree with it. And what I did was, they got to take their iPad away from first thing on Monday, but I kept all the chargers and cables, and you only got a charger and cable when you brought me back a signed form.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, so even for those kids who maybe, I don't know if anybody did this, but it has occasionally happened where they take their iPad home by mistake, quote unquote. Eventually you find out who did not bring a form back because their iPad is dead by the Tuesday or Wednesday, and they've got to come begging for a charger, and then we have a conversation about where the form should be. But I think we've got them all back in now, more or less. I still have to just double check that at the moment, but I'll probably do that after the show just now. And that's it. I think we're up and running. We're off and running. Already, I've seen some incredible things being done with the camera. I mean, that's a huge new thing for us. And I know that my own daughter, she's in primary five. She came home with her iPad on the first night and did 3 hours of homework, which involved shooting an elaborate video in iMovie, which she'd been practicing with over the summer on my iPad, but. She was ready to go with that, and she and one of her pals put together I think the topic was learn about an invention and then make something on your iPad that shows what you know about that invention. So true to form, April and one of her friends did the invention of toilet paper. And there's actually now a 7-minute movie explaining the invention of toilet paper. So maybe that'll hit the web at some point in the future. Maybe I'll just keep it for her wedding and show that at the reception. but it's interesting to see how that's going to go. I haven't seen much of the finished work yet, but I have seen a lot of kids working pretty hard on some of the stuff that they're interested in. And just to see new kids starting to develop their skills and some of that is really, really interesting. And also, one of the things that I did this today with a class which had a few new pupils that have come to the school in that class. I gave them a 1 hour lesson to just sit and do tap typing, which, you know, former sponsor of the show, and a great app. But it was interesting just the difference between the kids who have been using the iPad for 2 or 3 years and the kids who have only just started using them. And what I was seeing was that some of the new kids were, they were hitting between 7 and 10 words a minute on the iPad keyboard, and other kids were hitting 20, 30, 40 words a minute on the iPad keyboard. I saw one pupil, she was typing with two styluses. I don't know where she got two styluses from, but she had one in each hand, and she was she was doing that on the keyboard. So there's education still to be done, but... it's interesting just to see some numbers and some of that stuff, and some kids are actually getting really, really good with that keyboard now, so it's good to see that. I myself hit 49 words per minute, I'd like to say.
It goes back to that, you know, people said, oh, you know, the iPad, you can't type on it. It's like, show me, you know, plenty of kids are figuring it out, and all it takes is practice. I mean, if you spent your entire life typing on a keyboard, you're obviously not going to be as good on a touchscreen day one, but with the practice, anything you can be really, really good at.
Yeah, I mean, so much of it is muscle memory, and that works on iPad as well. You know, okay, you don't feel the keys, but I don't know about you, but I don't feel around for the keys when I type on my MacBook. I feel for the edges of the device, yes, absolutely, and I orient my hands from that. But and I think that's how most people work with keyboards, but that applies equally to the iOS keyboard as well.
Absolutely.
Cool. Bit of a shorter show tonight. I need to go to my bed or get a coffee or something like that.
Yeah, I've got a newborn at home, so my wife always appreciates shorter shows.
Yeah, this is the most tired podcast on the internet, I think, this week.
Yes, you're probably right. You are probably right. My kid's got a little bit of stomach issues. Like the other night, he cried from 5:30 p.m. to about 10 o'clock p.m. Not exaggerating.
Been there. It gets better.
Yeah.
We should make another one of those "it gets better" videos just for new parents.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so tired, like pulling my hair out, crazy. So, I guess wrap it up here.
Yeah, good show. I think at the end of the other thing I wanted to say: Casper Focus. Right, teachers are going nuts for Casper Focus. And I had not expected them to be quite so enthusiastic about this, but I've rolled it out to I started with the youngest kids, and the teacher who was teaching that class, I said, look, just, I don't know what you think about this. I don't know whether you want it or not, but just try it and let me know, you know, is it reliable? Does it give you a benefit in the classroom? And she came back to me after 4 days and she said, look, it's just one of the best things ever. She said, I love it because the thing she said to me was, she said, I can give them free time when I want them to have free time, and I can focus them when I want to focus them. And I thought that was just exactly the attitude that I wanted to hear from teachers in my school, was control when control needs to be there, but freedom when freedom needs to be there. And certainly for younger kids, the teacher's got to have a role in that. And I think much of the straw man argument and criticism of iPad and lack of control is that teachers sort of just want the kids to just be good. You know, they don't want kids to muck around. They just want kids to, you know, act like adults all the time, you know. And kids are kids. And sometimes giving them that extra bit of support is actually what needs to happen. And the other thing she said to me was, she said, well, maybe I wouldn't necessarily use it for the whole class, but there's one or two kids who need that quite a lot more than everybody else, so I'll give it to them, you know. And that was interesting for me to hear. And she's a big fan now, and we're going to start rolling it out to other classes over the next couple of weeks as well. And I'll update on how that goes. But I think in secondary, it'll be less of a commonly used thing, because in secondary, kids need to use more apps more of the time. But I think one of the things that it will be very useful for is the test taking. When it comes time to take a test or whatever, I can lock the kids into one app, you know, and set it up that way for them. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes as well. And for those kids who don't remember their passcode, the other beautiful thing CAS for Focus can do is you can just select an iPad and you can push a command to clear its passcode. That's basically the two things that Casper Focus can do. We'll focus an iPad on one app or clear its passcode. And that'll be useful from time to time as well, I'm sure.
It's one of those tools. Like, if you use it one time, it's worth its weight in gold. I'm a big fan of the app PDF Pen, and their PDF Pen, I guess it's four or six. Sorry, the new one's six.
Six, yeah.
You can convert PDF to Word. And like I've used that like two times. But two times, it saved me from retyping, like, you know, 10 to 20 pages.
It saved your morning's work and paid
right.
for itself.
It's like money well spent. And so I had a buddy that did that today. He's like, hey, what was that app that they talked about on Mac Power Users that time to do that? It's like, oh, PDF Pen, just go buy it. And he said, I'm a hero around the school. And so there's value in those features that, yeah, you don't use it every day, but like the one or two times it works well and it really saves the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the nice thing about Casper Focus is it's just a thing you get with Casper. It's not an extra product to buy. You know, another theme of the show, we're not fans of feature licensing. So Casper Focus just comes along for the ride. The app itself is free. It works on teachers' phones and it works on their iPads. And it's just a feature of the system. Just set it up, ready to go. We'll talk more about that as I know more about it, I guess, as well.
As we we get the year cranked up, and we're off on Monday. I guess when this show is actually released, it's Labor Day. So
okay.
It's a great, go to school for 2 weeks, holiday. It's my idea.
Excellent. Well, I'm actually heading to South Africa in a couple of weeks' time. I'm doing a series of events there with the Apple reseller for South Africa. So that's going to be interesting. We'll try and do a show from South Africa. I think that would be cool if we can make that happen.
Yeah.
I will be another 2 hour time zone away from you, but we'll do the sums and try and make that work as well. I'll take my microphone, see what we can organize.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
Excellent. Okay. Well, let's let people know where they can find us. I haven't blogged in ages because I've just been so busy, opening boxes and plugging in iPads, but my blog is spears.org, which is SPEIRS.org, and Fraser Spears on Twitter.
My blog is chambersdaily.com, and I'm at Bradley Chambers on Twitter.
Okay, thanks everybody for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.
Have a good week.